Blog Talk Radio.
Cowards try to change our lives, change the things they despise in America. But heroes, fueled by freedom, that unalienable right to be, came to rescue the injured, rescue the innocent, rescue these truths we hold.
Good afternoon to you. Jason Hawes here. It is American Faith Today, and it is the first Saturday of the fine month of May, May 7th, 2016, just a couple of days after Cinco de Mayo, for whatever heck kind of reason we're supposed to be celebrating or even considering Cinco de Mayo and giving it any consideration whatsoever. I'm not sure why exactly, but I am pretty sure that somewhere Donald Trump is highly perturbed by that, although he did tweet out a picture apparently of him eating a burrito or a taco or something on Cinco de Mayo, so maybe not. I Donald Trump may be conflicted a little bit by the whole Cinco de Mayo so-called holiday. But anyway, that's really not even all that important. It is also, it's Mother's Day weekend, quite honestly, and Mother's Day, of course, being tomorrow. And I did a fair amount of research, although it was kind of quick research, but a fair amount of research for today's show. But, you know, what I've really been researching quite heavily with the time of year that we are in, and again, with the aforementioned holiday or holidays, or, I need to get off of Cinco de Mayo, okay, Mother's Day. I've done a lot of research, and I found this incredible fact that everybody, this was absolutely stunning to me, and when I found this incontrovertible truth, that everybody, at least at some point in their life, had at least one mother. I know that's mind-boggling to even consider, but that is something that I have discovered. But anyway, hopefully, if you do have your mother with you, out there that you can spend time with her tomorrow in some fashion or another, or make a phone call or what have you. Hopefully, of course, you'll take the opportunity to do that, as I know you will. And I'll be no doubt heading over at some point tomorrow afternoon or tomorrow evening to my mom and dad's house to spend some time over there. Not sure how much time I'll spend over there, because I'll probably have some other things to do, including my part-time job, more than likely, after working on my short day, my full-time job. So it could be a rather busy Mother's Day for me regardless, but I'll certainly make the effort, and more than make the effort, we'll go over and spend some time, like I said, with my mom and dad tomorrow. And a happy Mother's Day to everyone out there who may be listening either right now or who will listen on the archives, who is a mother, who is a female and is a mother, And again, hopefully, happy Mother's Day as well, an early happy Mother's Day to all of your mothers out there, mothers of listeners as well. If you're listening on the archives, whenever that happens, it's very much appreciated. If you're listening right now, or if you happen to jump in and listen at some point live, the chat room is open. Also, the call-in line is always open as well. If you wish to call in, and if you are listening live, that number 347-989-8387. Again, many people listen on the archives. Unfortunately, from time to time, people will say that they had a problem listening to the show, whether it's live or on the archives, which one of the things that I was at least grateful for today, as opposed to last week, or in comparison to last week, when I wasn't quite sure if the show even recorded, it did, but I had a message from Blog Talk Radio saying they were having some difficulties before I even got started, and the intro music didn't play, and so it was somewhat chaotic, but a show was recorded, a show was done nonetheless, and hopefully today a show will be done without any kinks or glitches or bugs. If we have bugs, well, we certainly don't want any Zika virus in our show today. But anyway, glad to have you, whether you're listening live or whether you're listening on the archives, like I said, whenever that time may come. Now, again, you never know how my mind will work. It's actually sometimes quite a frightening turn of events, even for me. But I many times will have a spark of tepid spark of inspiration during the week as to what direction, what topic to bring for Saturday's show in a given week. And I kind of settled on going back to something and building a show off of it, but going back to something, and I suppose it's rather convenient and fits in nicely that I'm doing this actually, as mentioned, on Mother's Day weekend. That part of it wasn't really planned at all, but it has turned out that way. I wanted to go back to a story that I shared, again, on the American Faith Today Facebook page. I shared it in a couple of other Facebook groups, and I know there were some people who really enjoyed seeing this story when I shared it on Facebook online, because, again, if you are pro-life, as I am, and if you are Christian as well, but even just being pro-life, it was an incredible story, an incredible article to read, to come across, and it was one, like I said, that I shared pretty much as soon as I came across it. Now, it appeared first in the Telegraph, which is a newspaper, I believe, or a news site. This obviously the online version of the Telegraph in the UK. And it refers to a study that took place actually right here in the United States at Northwestern, one of our more prestigious universities, of course. And the article titled, it's in the science section, it appeared on April 26th. About a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, somewhere in there. And it's titled, Bright Flash of Light Marks Incredible Moment Life Begins When Sperm Meets the Egg, from Sarah Napton, the science editor for the UK Telegraph. Human life begins in a bright flash of light as a sperm meets an egg, scientists have shown for the first time after capturing the astonishing, quote, fireworks on film. So, you know, this is actually a really big deal, and this is a huge, as far as I'm concerned, a huge piece of documentary evidence. Not that we necessarily needed it. Certainly most of us did not, but a huge piece, nonetheless, of documentary evidence, even video evidence, of just when exactly life begins. They captured an explosion of tiny sparks that erupts from the egg itself at the exact moment of conception, at the exact moment that that egg is fertilized by sperm. Scientists before had seen the phenomenon occur in other animals, but it is indeed the first time it has also been shown to happen in humans. Again, I think no big surprise for many of us, knowing that we have one creator, and certainly his pattern of creation is very consistent throughout all life that he's created. Now you can get into categories and you know, what have you. But anyway, the article goes on to say, not only is it an incredible spectacle highlighting the very moment that a new life begins, the size of the flash can be used to determine the quality of the fertilized egg. Again, this research, this study occurred at Northwestern University, Chicago, Illinois, and the researchers noticed that some of the eggs burn brighter than others, showing that they are more likely to produce a healthy baby. Now, unfortunately, there is a downside to this, which actually is going to be talked about, and some people, when I looked at some side articles and side commentary, this is kind of the downside. The discovery could help fertility doctors pick the best fertilized eggs to transfer during in vitro fertilization. It was remarkable, said Professor Teresa Woodruff, one of the study's two senior authors and an expert in ovarian biology at Northwestern. She's quoted as saying, we discovered the zinc spark just 5 years ago in the mouse, and to see the zinc radiate out in a burst from each human egg was breathtaking. This means if you can look at the zinc spark at the time of fertilization, you will know immediately which eggs are the good ones to transfer in vitro fertilization. Now, again, and the article goes on with some more information. I'd posted this, like I said, when I originally saw it. And it goes on with some more information from there that I won't get into for time's sake, even though, well, we'll see how much time that we actually have with today's show. But anyway, a truly groundbreaking study, an incredible piece of evidence that life does indeed begin at conception. Now, the downside, like I said, and I hate to talk about the downside here because it is, you know, it's such a remarkable occurrence and such a remarkable discovery of God's creative hand, God's creative power, God's creative force at work, again, right at that moment of conception. But unfortunately, the times that we do live in, and you know, even though most of what I talk about on the show, unfortunately, because look, you know, turn on the news today. Turn on the news, listen to the news, read the news, and of course, most of what we come across as far as news stories go today are negative. And certainly you can find positive news stories. I try to incorporate some in from time to time here on the show. You can you can find those out there easily enough. Unfortunately, most of what I wind up talking about winds up being pretty negative as well. But just the world that we live in right now, it is indeed something where there's a lot of darkness in the world. You know, it is a fallen world. It is a sinful world. And, I hate to go here, but other people have gone here, and it is a valid point. Now, this from breakpoint.org, John Stone Street commenting on the same story and talking about light at conception, God's creation, not ours. And he references, again, this article that appeared in the UK Telegraph, quoting, human life begins in a bright flash of light as a sperm meets an egg. Scientists have shown for the first time after capturing the astonishing fireworks on film. Again, already mentioned. He quotes a individual here, Simcha Fisher, writing at her particular website or blog, I guess, Alatea Alatia, not familiar with it. When she saw this headline from the Telegraph, her response was, "It's almost as if something amazing is going on, something that shouldn't be messed with." But, again, reading between the lines, people kind of do want to mess with it. Again, as John Stone Street here says, he quotes, "Unfortunately, that's not how the people behind this discovery responded. After seeing nature's fireworks, their minds turned to how they could use what they saw to control and manipulate nature." And again, it goes back to the in vitro fertilization of the egg and picking out which eggs, basically. What people have, not so much in this article, not so much this individual, John Stone Street, but what people have kind of taken from this, when they make a comment of some of the eggs, some of the flashes were brighter than others, and the flashes that were brighter showed which eggs, which conception had the greater odds of producing a healthier baby. You know, again, like I said, I hate going here. I really do. But we know that some people would use this to, as some said, or speculate anyway, go off into eugenics. In other words, if you get a flash that isn't very big, that isn't very bright, perhaps that's a baby that is not going to be healthy, that's going to have problems, and that maybe isn't worthy of being carried to term. Perhaps that's an egg in vitro fertilization that, you know, you don't get that big flash, that big spark, that bright, you know, the zinc reacting to throw off a bright explosion of fireworks, so to speak. Then, you know, maybe, again, you don't even worry about helping that life along. And that's just something that some people have taken from this, that people are going to use this to try to pick and choose which lives, which conceived lives actually have value and which may not. You know, I'd like to think that that would not happen, but unfortunately it probably will. But it is still such, it's amazing. To me, it is absolutely amazing. You know, it's a beautiful, beautiful thing that they were able to see this. And it should encourage, it should document, it should make it quite clear to anyone who holds a pro-life position, to anyone who has pro-life beliefs, to anyone who will fight for the life of every, and I do mean every, unborn child in the womb or wherever, that those of us who take that stand, those of us who have those beliefs, truly are on the right side of things. You know, truly are every piece of evidence at this point basically backs us up. And this is just the latest incredible piece of visual evidence to show that, yes, life does begin at conception, that God does place that soul. You know, I'm not trying to say that the light is the soul or anything like that. But, you know, who knows? Who knows? God knows. But that spark of life, that spark of creation occurs instantly at that very moment that sperm fertilizes that egg. And again, documented in this video. Now, I wanted to jump off of this or play off of this a little bit again, just to throw a little bit more meat to the whole pro-life argument, pro-life cause, you know, what have you. Now, I saw this at abort73.com. Now, it's a website that I wasn't familiar with until I actually found it in, again, researching various things for today's show. It is a pro-life website, abort73.com. The case against abortion, facts about abortion, bringing it into abortion. So there's no doubt the people who run, the people who made this website, it's no doubt what side of the issue they stand on. But it mentions here, of course, every new life begins at conception. This is an irrefutable fact of biology. It is true for animals and true for humans. When considered alongside the law of biogenesis, that law being every species reproduces after its own kind, we cannot draw only one conclusion in regard to abortion. No matter what the circumstances of conception, no matter how far along in the pregnancy, abortion always ends the life of an individual human being. Every honest abortion advocate concedes this simple fact. As a matter of fact, they have some quotes here from some people on the pro-abortion side of things who admit, which pretty much shows how unbelievably, disgustingly sold out they are to their cause when they can even make these admissions. But you have Faye Waddleton, the longest reigning president of Planned Parenthood. Of course, now that is Cecile Richards. But Faye Waddleton argued as far back in 1997 that everybody already knows that abortion kills. In an interview with Ms. Magazine, she was quoted as saying, "I think we have deluded ourselves into believing that people don't know that abortion is killing. So any pretense that abortion is not killing is a signal of our ambivalence, a signal that we cannot say, yes, it kills a fetus," which, you know what, it doesn't just kill a fetus, it kills a human being. Even though there are some people, including a guy that I used to work with, who would act like you committed some type of cardinal sin if you use the word fetus, which if somebody wants to use baby instead of fetus, you know, I'm certainly not going to discourage them from doing that. But fetus, actually, in the Latin, does simply mean little person. So, you know, even though it may sound like kind of a funny word, it means a little person. Now, on the other side of the pond, as the article says, you have Anne Faridi, the CEO of the largest independent abortion provider in the UK, in a 2008 debate saying, "We can accept that the embryo is a living thing and the fact that it has a beating heart, that it has its own genetic system within it. It's clearly human in the sense that it's not a gerbil, and we can recognize that it is human life." And yet, again, this from the CEO of the largest independent abortion provider in the UK saying, oh yeah, it's human. It has a beating heart. It has its own genetic system, its own makeup, its own separate DNA. And, you know, it's not a gerbil. It's a human being, but we'll kill it anyway. And you also have Naomi Wolf, a prominent feminist author, abortion supporter, who writes, "Clinging to rhetoric about abortion in which there is no life and no death, we entangle our beliefs in a series of self-delusions, fibs, and evasions." Well, of course, that's pretty much all that they have. "And we risk becoming precisely what our critics charge us with being, callous, selfish, and casually destructive men and women who share a cheapened view of human life. We need to contextualize the fight to defend abortion rights within a moral framework that admits that the death of a fetus is a real death." And now, you know, these people are kind of trying to rationalize in such a way that they make little sense at all, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, basically, she's admitting that what they are doing is killing, and trying to justify that in some kind of cheap, twisted, diluted, contextualized moral framework to defend their own murder, basically. You have Dave Boonin, in his book, A Defense of Abortion, who wrote, "In the top drawer of my desk, I keep a picture of my son. This picture was taken on September 7th, 1993, 24 weeks before he was born. The sonogram image is murky, but it reveals clear enough a small head tilted back slightly and an arm raised up and bent with a hand pointing back toward the face, excuse me, and the thumb extended out toward the mouth. There is no doubt in my mind that this picture, too, shows my son at a very early stage in his physical development, and there is no question that the position I defend in this book entails," and here's the grotesque punchline, "that it would have been morally permissible to end his life at this point." Now, I mean, again, how grotesque can we get here? This is a man talking about his own son, who we can presume that he loves, that when he was in the womb of his mother, still developing, still quite human-looking, that this man's saying, well, at that point it would have been completely morally permissible and justifiable to go ahead and kill him. I mean, to his son who had been born, you know, can you imagine having that conversation with your child, with your son? Could you imagine trying to justify that, trying to explain that? I couldn't. I mean, non-parent here, but I couldn't. How morally bankrupt, how spiritually empty are these people? And you know what? These are people, quite frankly, who probably need a heck of a lot of prayer. And, you know, every argument, and again, going back to this study, you know, life clearly beginning at conception, human life beginning at conception, law of biogenesis, you know, abortion advocates, pro-abortion people saying, yes, it's human life that we are killing. And the argument always seems to be, well, you know what, we're further developed, we're older, we're so-called wiser, we're in the position of authority, so what we say goes. If it's not convenient for us, then it's not convenient for us. God is the authority. God is the one who grants life. God is the one who, quite frankly, in the most basic real sense, determines when life for an individual begins and when life for an individual ends. And even you can take that out even spiritually or in the final sense, and some people even being blotted out in hell when that time comes. But it is God who is the author of life. It is God who sends each and every soul into that embryo, into that developing fetus, into that flesh body, into this flesh age, to pass through it. And you know, I made a comment one time, and somebody disagreed with me and actually made a very good point. I made a comment one time on a show on a subject such as this, that if someone is aborted in the womb, then unfortunately they did not have the opportunity. I don't remember exactly how I worded it. Basically, they did not have the opportunity to pass through this flesh age, which somebody quite sharp on Facebook pointed out that, well, you know, they did. I mean, that soul, that entity did what God wanted them to do. They went into the womb, and it certainly wasn't their fault, which I never would have obviously wanted to lead anyone to believe that it was, but it certainly wasn't their fault that they were cut off in the womb. But, you know, it is God's will. It is God's purpose for everyone to be born in a flesh body and live their life and determine, are they going to love him or are they going to go in the opposite direction? Now, you also have the quote from Peter Singer, and again, I'll be running short on time here. I want to get to an outstanding story. I've still got about 15, 16 minutes, but you have Peter Singer and his absolutely muddled up mess, saying in Practical Ethics, Peter Singer, the guy who says that until a child is 3 years old, 4 years old, a living child, what have you, that it's still ethically permissible to kill them because they're not valuable enough at that age or whatever he says. This gobbledygook, wise in his own mind, saying it is possible to give human being a precise meaning. We can use it as equivalent to members of the species Homo sapiens. Whether a being is a member of a given species is something that can be determined scientifically by an examination of the nature of the chromosomes and the cells of living organisms. In this sense, there is no doubt that from the first moments of its existence, an embryo conceived from human sperm and eggs is a human being. So even he admits that. Now, it's not a human being of value in these people's minds. In God's mind, in God's eye, it is. Because it's not even that flesh body. And certainly the death of a flesh body doesn't mean the death of the soul. We know that. But it is still cutting off a life well before it should have been cut off, that God deems as precious. And, you know, it goes on. Basically, the point here being, even every pro-abortion proponent, every pro-abortion advocate out there admitting that life in the womb is a life that begins at conception, that is a human life. Now, it mentions the incredibly bad decision of Roe v. Wade, legalizing abortion in the United States in 1973, actually built on the claim there's no way to know for certain whether or not abortion kills because no one can say for certain when life begins. Well, we certainly can now. We absolutely can now, and I would argue that we could even back then. And even Dr. Nathanson, Bernard Nathanson, who was one of the co-founders of NARAL, who had a kind of a come-to-Jesus moment, if you will, where he realized based on even back in the 70s and 80s, the evidence, the technology that was there at that time, that based on that he was completely on the wrong side of things, killing innocent human lives in the womb. And Nathanson afterwards saying, of course I was pleased with Justice in Roe v. Wade, with Justice Harry Blackmun's abortion decisions, which were an unbelievably sweeping triumph for our cause, far broader than our 1970 victory in New York or the advances since then. I was pleased with Blackmun's conclusions, that is. I could not plumb the ethical or medical reasoning that had produced the conclusions. Our final victory had been propped up on a misreading of obstetrics, gynecology, and embryology, and that's a dangerous way to win. In other words, even back then, Dr. Nathanson admitted that, you know, the rationale behind, well, we don't know when life begins, was wrong. That the rationale, the chief rationale behind Roe v. Wade, and as explained here, was a lie, was incorrect, was scientifically incorrect. Now, again, it mentioned here, you've got all sorts of quotes here that I will have on the American Faith Today Facebook page from this website, a modern teaching text on embryology, also older teaching text on embryology, basically all quotes documenting that, again, just to be as simple as I can be, the biology of prenatal development in National Geographic in 2006, one sentence here, biologically speaking, human development begins at fertilization. And you also have quotes here to United States Congress, United States Senate Judiciary Subcommittee, 1981. You have a testimony from a collection of medical experts saying it is incorrect to say that the biological data cannot be decisive. It is scientifically correct to say that an individual human life begins at conception. And again, you have other quotes from other experts, doctors, scientists. I have learned from my earliest medical education that human life begins at the time of conception. Dr. Jerome Lejeune, Professor of Genetics, University of Descartes, after fertilization has taken place, a new human being has come into being. It is no longer a matter of taste or opinion. It is plain experimental evidence. Each individual has a very neat beginning at conception. You also have Dr. Watson A. Bowes. The beginning of single human life is, from a biological point of view, a simple and straightforward matter. The beginning is conception. This is what scientists have agreed upon for some time now. And again, just incredibly, explosively, literally explosively documented in this study at the at Northwestern University. But what does God say? You know, again, I bring God into it. What does God say about when life begins? And I just want to read some quotes here. This, I don't know exactly. I didn't dig these out from my Bible. I'm looking from at a website. I don't know if we're dealing with a King James, NIV, what type of translation. But again, Deuteronomy 32:39. It is I, God speaking, it is I who bring both death and life. Job 31:15. Did not he who made me in the womb make him? And did not one fashion us in the womb? Of course, that being God. Psalm 139:13-16. You formed my inmost being. You knit me in my mother's womb. I praise you, so wonderfully you made me. Wonderful are your works. My very self you knew. My bones were not hidden from you. When I was being made in secret, fashioned as in the depths of the earth, your eyes foresaw my actions. In your book, all are written down. My days were shaped before one came to be. He knew you. He knew us. He knew me before we were even in our mother's womb. Isaiah 49:1. Yahweh called me when I was in the womb before my birth. He had pronounced my name. Jeremiah 1:5. Before I formed you, God speaking to Jeremiah, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. And then we have the wonderful example in the Gospel of Luke, the first chapter, speaking of Christ's conception. Luke 1:39-44. In those days, Mary arose and went with haste into the hill country to a city of Judah. And she entered the house of Zechariah and greeted Elizabeth, her cousin, of course. And when Elizabeth heard the greeting of Mary, the babe, being John the Baptist, the babe leaped. The babe leapt in her womb. Sensing that very presence of Jesus Christ, of God himself dwelling with us. And Elizabeth was filled with the Holy Spirit, and she exclaimed with a loud cry, "Blessed are you among women, and blessed is the fruit of your womb. And why is this granted me, that the mother of my Lord should come to me? For behold, when the voice of your greeting came to my ears, the babe in my womb leaped for joy." And we know what the purpose of Mary's visit to Elizabeth was. It was to document to her that she had conceived Jesus Christ himself. And John, sensing in his mother Elizabeth's womb, John the Baptist sensing the very presence of Jesus Christ himself at that moment of conception. And again, it is completely evident when life begins. Now, like I said, I want to finish here. I've got about 6-7 minutes. LiveActionNews.org, there was a couple of really intriguing, but I mean, this is a fantastic story. It really is. And you know, what's fantastic is they have, of course, these abortion pills. There's an article here on Live Action News. Doctors have now saved 175 babies from abortion through abortion pill reversal techniques. And this is one such example. LiveActionNews.org, miracle baby Gabriel was saved from abortion after his mother sought a reversal. Being 21 years old and in my third year of nursing school, everything was going just right. And again, I guess this may be actually, I don't know if This is the writer of the article itself, Andrea Mancini. It would appear that it is, giving her testimony here. But anyway, being 21 years old and in my third year of nursing school, everything was going just right. I had all the materialistic things. I was going out every night. I had the perfect group of friends. I had the perfect good-looking boyfriend, and I was living my dream as a popular college cheerleader until May 3rd, 2014 came. Me and my boyfriend had been fighting for 3 days and had completely cut off communications with one another. He decided to take a flight to Miami for the weekend, and I decided to go out with friends. The next evening, around 6 p.m., I was keeled over with a horrible pain in my lower stomach. I begged my mother to drive me to the hospital. After all tests were completed, the doctor entered the room with a stern look on his face and stayed quiet for what felt like hours. "I'm sorry to inform you, but you are pregnant," were the words that rolled off of his tongue, leaving me feeling paralyzed. It was impossible. I had been on birth control for 8 years. I'm not going to get into the moral, even though the thought comes to mind. Been on birth control since he was 13 years old. But regardless, my mother slowly lifted her head with a face of disappointment. I stopped her before she could say anything and told her, "I'm not keeping it. I will have the problem fixed by this week." I said those words with no shame, as if I had gotten a bad grade that could be fixed so easily. She begged me and begged me to rethink my decision, but I was set. 2 weeks later, I was still pregnant and fighting my heart on what I should do. When I finally got the courage to tell my boyfriend the news, he shut me out with a careless laugh, looked at me, and said, "You know what you have to do." The next day, my body felt numb as we drove into the parking lot of the Planned Parenthood. I approached the clerk, and without even lifting her head, she mumbled the words, "How can I help you?" I whispered, "I need an abortion." She quickly slid me a packet of forms and told me to have a seat. And basically, it goes on to say, she waited in line, basically. They called her name into the room. The nurse began to explain the procedure to her, that she would take two pills. The first pill is what they called the killer, that cuts off all nutrients and oxygen to the placenta over a 24-hour time span, slowly killing it off. The second pill was the pill that would reject the placenta from the body, in turn, completing the procedure. I immediately, she says, broke down in tears. I couldn't hear another word. I was sick to my stomach. She handed me a tissue and told me I was doing the right thing. It wasn't the right time, and led me into the exam room. She went into the exam room. She was told she was 9 weeks pregnant. There was a heartbeat to the baby. She begged her boyfriend to change his mind. He would not change his mind. She took the first pill, again, somewhat reluctantly, tears running down her face. The doctor callously saying, "Now hurry up and take that pill before it melts in your hand. It's very expensive." Nice morals there, Planned Parenthood. She says she swallowed the pill and immediately tried to throw it up. The doctor sat me back down, handed me a brown bag, said in a stern voice, "Take the next pill in 24 hours and make sure you take it. I'll see you in 2 weeks for a follow-up." She ran out of the office, straight for the car, fell to the ground, crying and screaming for God to forgive her. Her boyfriend walked to the car, got in, drove off as if nothing had ever happened. And at that point, she was rather disgusted with her boyfriend. She wound up turning to God. She called her aunt, who spends night and day living for him. She begged her to pray to God that God would understand her mistake and heal him and save her baby. She wound up getting, I'm so short on time here, she wound up getting in touch with some people, with an office that could reverse the procedure of this abortion pill. On December 31st, 2014, she gave birth to a beautiful, strong, healthy baby boy. They successfully reversed it. Her boyfriend was by her side the entire time. She goes on to say, the days spent with her son have been unexplainable. She thanks God, thanks the doctor who saved the life of what she calls her miracle baby, named after the Archangel Gabriel, because he is a miracle, she says, a true angel. And again, I had to go kind of quickly through that, but what an amazing story. And what an amazing study, again, documenting that life begins at conception. Always remember it, always thank God for it, and never be shy about saying so yourself. I'm Jason Hawes.